You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Wars have inspired writers like Stephen Crane, Ernest Hemingway, Norman Mailer, James Jones, James Salter, and Tim O'Brien to create some of the finest works of American literature. Well, it's likely that with the help of a project created by the National Endowment for the Arts, the current conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq will inspire the most writing ever. A new documentary film and a companion book, both called Operation Homecoming, draw upon some of those first-hand accounts. And with us now are the film's director, Richard E. Robbins, and one of the participating writers, retired Army Sergeant John McCary, who's now a journalist for the Wall Street Journal. I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show. Hello.
Hello. We're very glad to be here.
Now, John, your piece was drawn from a letter you wrote to your mother. Had you thought of it at first as anything more than just a letter, an email to your mother and your family?
Not really. You know, it was a very sort of a, it began as a private correspondence between myself and my parents. It's something that I did on average about once a month while I was over there. And it was just a decision we made very early on. You know, I kind of put the question to them. I can give you the straight story, or I can give you the pared down version of what's going on over here. And they, you know, to their credit, right from the front said, go ahead and give us the fire hose. So, for me, it was just a way to sort of communicate the kinds of things that I was going through. And in that particular instance, it was just something that that really needed to come out at that point.
Sergeant Brian Turner remarks on the inadequacy of words to convey the full experiences of war. Well, you work now as a journalist. Had you done any writing before you went to Iraq? And did you experience that the same thing that Brian Turner remarked about?
Well, I'm supposed to clarify that I'm an intern at the Wall Street Journal.
Uh-huh.
I haven't attained that status yet. But I'd always written, but it had always been a very personal endeavor. It is just something for myself. But this project and the kind of resonance that I've gotten from the correspondence that I used to send home from the front, and then from people that have participated in this project and responded to the initiative from the National Endowment for the Arts, has really opened up that world for me to... Well, it just underlines the importance and the kinds of issues and thoughts and emotions that you really can convey through literature and through writing. So for me, it's really opened up a whole new door on a way to communicate with the rest of the world.
Were you aware of the NEA project when you began writing about your experiences?
Oh, none whatsoever. It was a random email that I got when I came home from deployment.
Richard, how did you get involved in this project?
Well, I had been thinking for a while about how to make a film that really spoke to the human experiences of soldiers. And I had done some work with soldiers in the past, and I knew how hard it was to get them to kind of open up about what happened to them. The military culture does not put a real premium on individual expression. And when the NEA announced its project, it just seemed like an incredible opportunity to speak to a group of soldiers who had sort of self-selected for feeling like they had something they wanted to communicate. And soldiers who write, troops who write, tend to be a little more reflective, a little more introspective. I mean, I don't want to generalize, but certainly in terms of the soldiers that we met, it was pretty remarkable. I think they will defy a lot of stereotypes about people who wear the uniform.
Well, that introspection is what distinguishes this from another film which came out recently, in which the soldiers themselves did the filming, in fact, filmed things that they were involved with in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Tim O'Brien, who wrote the things they carried, says in the film that art can help put you in the shoes of a soldier. Is that something, John, that soldiers would like the rest of us to understand what it's like to be a soldier?
Well, I think very much so, and I think it's a really important issue to bring up, and it's a factor in this conflict and in our military deployments that I don't think gets a lot of attention. I mean, you can't overplay it, but the back and forth in the media, and I see this all day, every day, has to do with the efficacy of the operations and whether or not our strategy is appropriately conceived. But these are the voices of people who have to carry out that strategy. So when you throw a catchphrase out there like stay the course or bring our troops home, these are the guys who are affected by that, and these are the guys who are going to carry out whatever you've decided is the most important thing to do in that situation. And I think that's a really important voice that has to be heard, because I'm not sure that people really understand the ground truth behind saying something like that or debating an issue like that. And that's what the voices in this book and the voices that Richard's films brings out really are all about. It's about what it takes to do that and to get it done, and the price that you pay as a human being being part of that.
Living in a situation where you can sit around for a while and then you suddenly get up, and the minute you turn a corner, you wonder whether you're going to survive. You're going to be killed just by turning a corner.
That's right. It's a pretty bizarre predicament to be in as a person and as a human being, and certainly as a citizen or a soldier. You're pretty far removed from a lot of the discourse that goes on, a lot of the back and forth, a lot of the consideration. And what's really fascinating, I think, about this book and what is heavily conveyed in the film is the conclusions that you come to that are very philosophical and very sort of existential in nature, that these people who have gone through that experience have digested and come to. And then I'm just completely overcome with the fact that with the way that it comes to life in the film, the words absolutely leap off the page with the images that he's put together and with the way that he tells their stories.
Richard, was most of the writing in the forms of letters and emails? Because there's at least one work of fiction here.
Yes. The soldiers write in all different ways, and I'm sure that's been true for a long time. I think the emails are probably, something that we're going to have from this conflict that is brand new. But
and blogs. You have one anonymous blog.
Yeah, Colby Bazell's writing was originally in the form of a blog, which has a remarkable immediacy to it. I think that what's most compelling, and I should say I'm a big fan of the War Tapes. I think it's a phenomenal film. What you get in the writing from troops is a level of intimacy. There's something about the words that people put down on a page or on a screen when they're alone, even if they know that there's an audience. There's a kind of immediacy and intimacy to the way they express themselves, pouring their insides out, so to speak, that I think is really unusual and in some ways sets this film apart from the other things that have been made about, there are really a lot of fine documentaries that have come out of this conflict.
How many submissions were sent to the NEA project?
Oh, I don't know if I have a final count. I want to say it was around 1,500 or 1,600. It was more than 10,000 pages.
And then they had to be culled. Were they edited?
They were edited, yes. Everybody, I know that Andy Carroll, who edited the book, spent a lot of time working with the authors, and he did his edits, and I did a separate set of edits because, obviously, to put things on the screen, we have time constraints that are different from the printed word. The only thing that wasn't edited were Brian Turner's poems, which I'm just not brave enough to attempt to edit his poetry.
Well, John, what about your piece? Were you pleased with the way it turned out? How different was it from the original?
I'm not sure if you mean in the book or in the film.
Well, in both.
Well, I think it should be clear that I don't think the pieces in the book were particularly edited at all. I know that there was absolutely no government interference in the editing of the pieces. I know that was something I put as a conditionality on my piece right from the get-go.
But even the great writers have to deal with their editors sometimes and argue over how a sentence should be written and the grammar, whether the grammar is correct or whether it shouldn't be correct.
No, there was none of that with the project. And in fact, Andrew Carroll was pretty adamant that these should be author-submitted pieces and they should be the unedited voice of people that were on the ground.
Uh-huh.
I think they were mostly edited just for length, and John's pieces were fairly short, so he may not have faced any of that.
And then you adapted his piece, which is called To the Fallen. John, you said that your parents said, tell us the real story. This must have really upset them a lot.
It did. It was certainly an upsetting piece of correspondence for them to receive, and I honestly had no sort of larger sense of the effect of it until long after I had gotten home and we'd started to sort of discuss what kind of a journey they went through on the other end of the phone line or on the other end of the email correspondence. But they also, you know, everyone who responded to this, and you know, it got forwarded a lot and sent around, really surprised me with the amount of compassion and resonance and identification that they had with even something so upsetting as losing people in a violent incident. You know, I expected that to be sort of outside the realm of people's experience. But what I found was that people identified with it in ways that I would never have expected. And the other thing to note is that sort of at the end of the piece, I really had to come to peace with what had happened to me in very short order. I mean, I had a whopping 45 minutes to sort of get over this funeral and get on with my day. And you do come to that sense at the end that, you know, that you've been shaken down to your very core, but that you've no choice but to drive on. And really the way to do that is in dedication to and in memory of the people who have not made it that far with you.
We're talking with retired Army Sergeant John McCary, one of the contributors to Operation Homecoming. In book form, it's subtitled Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Home Front in the Words of U.S. Troops and Their Families. It's published by Random House. There's also a film which has included his piece, and that opens at the Film Forum at 209 West Houston Street this coming Friday. It will also be aired in, I imagine, an edited version on PBS on April 16th. And the film is from Richard E. Robbins. And Richard, every one of these pieces has a title, like chapters in a book, and then has a unique visual approach. So was that part of the real problem, making this film, trying to find the right way to convey each story but not make them all look the same?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we decided from the beginning that we would try and treat each piece of writing separately and come up with a visual style that that was an accompaniment and didn't, you know, try not to overpower the words. You know, I think there are different kinds of filmmakers, and I personally, you know, come from a point of view that the subject is primary, not my view of it, and you have to adapt the filmmaking to the subject. So there were a lot of failed experiments. John's piece is a good example. We had our initial attempt to bring that to the screen didn't work, and what we ended up with in the final film was quite a departure from what we had initially imagined. But somehow, it's about finding the right emotional and visual tone, and it's a hard thing to bring literature to the screen, you know, and not overpower it. Visuals can be very overpowering, especially when you're dealing with something as violent and action-packed as war.
You had the text read by actors, not the soldiers themselves. Pretty impressive group of actors: Robert Duvall, Blair Underwood, Beau Bridges, Justin Kirk, Josh Lucas. But would something have been gained by having the soldiers themselves read their own prose?
You know, we debated it a long time, and we did a bunch of tests with the soldiers reading their own prose. I think that there's a real skill, and you know, I spent a lot of years working with Peter Jennings and came to really admire his skill using your voice to communicate emotion. And I don't think that necessarily everyone who writes can do that. So certainly there's something that would have been gained by having the actors read having the writers read their own words, but I felt that the actors ultimately did a better job of communicating the emotion that's present in the words.
The film will also air on PBS as part of the series America at a Crossroads. I'm assuming that some of this had to be adjusted for television viewing.
Well, it's shorter on television. It runs about 20 minutes shorter for the television version. And we have yet to hear how PBS is going to handle the language issues. I'm sure that's a pressing issue for them, but that's out of our hands.
Is the project still receiving submissions?
I believe the submissions to the NEA's initiative are closed. They just had such an overwhelming response. I think at a certain point they didn't quite have the manpower to continue to handle all of it. I know that there are continue to be writing workshops that are going on that the NEA is taking to military bases, and all of the writing that was submitted to Operation Homecoming has been donated and is being housed in the Library of Congress, which I think is for historical purposes really fantastic.
Now it's being taken to military bases, but John, maybe I'm reading this wrong, but the overall sense that I got from reading these submissions and then looking at the film was that war is worse than hell, and it might even come across as anti-war. Did you feel that?
That's a pretty big question. I think the anti-war sentiment that you picked up on there shouldn't be translated into sort of the political sensation that phrase can connotate. It's anti-war in the sense that as a person who grows up in a democratic, free, and civil society, when you enter an atmosphere where all of those sort of tacit rules that you've come to accept as normal, like I won't kill you and I won't try to hurt you and I won't cause you pain for no apparent reason, those kinds of things that you sort of quietly accept about your normal life are taken away. And I think there's a sense of shock and disgust and horror at that. But that's not a new theme. And I'm not sure that people who wrote those pieces walk away from it thinking never again. I just think that there's a palpable sense of how deep people can sink in the way that they treat one another, and that can really shake some of your presumptions about the way people act.
Well, you speak in the film about a man in your infantry division who died on a mission you sent him on.
That's right.
That's something that you probably will think about for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. I feel like the war is starting to mean more to me every day that I walk away from it, more than when I was in it.
Mm-hmm. When you watch television, do you see it? Do you think through a different filter than people who haven't been there?
Absolutely. It's not just television. It's the news. It's movies. It's everything. Because, again, it's the kind of point I was trying to make earlier, which is that there is a translation there that doesn't get made explicit in a lot of the media that we see, which is that people are actually having to do this. And you can even see a, you know, eye on the street kind of survey of a battle or something to that effect, but you don't see the thousands of civilians. You don't see the toll on someone in having to observe this kind of upheaval of society all day, every day, and in some sense, to have a sense of responsibility for having been part of that. Been part of that upheaval, so it's can be a very torturous process, and I think that aspect of it needs to be highlighted more heavily than it is right now, and to me that it's fundamental, because there will be a very personal effect to the decisions that you make.
Richard, I was surprised that no women were represented.
There is a woman who appears in the film, and in the end, her piece of writing got cut just for time. Sharon Allen, who's a great writer, we made a lot of really tough choices, and I, you know, one of the things that that surprised us in terms of that, we picked the writing essentially blind. We didn't know who the authors were, we didn't know what branch they served in, what their names were, how old they were. We really wanted to make the selections initially based on the writing itself, and when we started to actually meet the soldiers who we had selected, there were a handful of women, and unfortunately in the editing process, none of them ended up their writing, although Sharon Allen does appear in the film. I just wanted to go back for a second to the anti-war question, because, of course, all of us are very sensitive to the sort of political climate surrounding this conflict. I do think that the film is anti-war in the most basic human sense, which is that we're all against war, and it's not about this war, whether the war is just or unjust or right or wrong, but war is a terrible thing, and I think it speaks to the political climate that we've found ourselves in, that saying we're against war has somehow become a politically charged statement. I mean, even the people I'd like to think who believe that we are doing the right thing, the only thing in Iraq, have to be against the idea of war as a basic human experience. Nothing that we would wish on our friends, our children, our neighbors.
Well, you've already been showing this film around, and it's been shown at a number of festivals, and I'm assuming that you've gotten feedback from some former soldiers. Are the reactions different if they served in different wars? Would somebody who was in World War II or Korea have a different reaction to this than someone who was in Vietnam or someone who just came back from Iraq or Afghanistan?
I do think that World War II and Korea definitely had a different set of issues. I think that there are an enormous number of resonances with Vietnam, particularly in terms of finding yourself in a foreign land where you're not sure who is an enemy and who is a friend, and having to make a lot of really tough decisions on very short notice, always feeling like you're a target without clear front lines. We heard a lot of those kinds of resonance, and actually, interestingly, talking to a lot of the Vietnam veterans who we met in working on this, Tim O'Brien, Tobias Wolf, and others, how intensely they felt the news from Iraq, how much it brought back to them their own experiences, and how much they were still living their war experiences, in many cases 30 or 40 years after they had left a war zone.
A lot closer to their experience than the first Gulf War, in fact.
Absolutely.
I want to thank you both so much for being with us. I've been speaking with Richard E. Robbins, whose film Operation Homecoming, Writing the Wartime Experience, opens at the Film Forum at 209 West Houston Street this coming Friday, and then will be aired in an edited version on PBS on April 16th. There's also a book called Operation Homecoming, Iraq, Afghanistan, and the Home Front, in the words of U.S. troops and their families. That's published by Random House, and contributed to both the film and the book has also been with us, retired Army Sergeant John McCary. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.